Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome, everybody, to Big Dog Ball Talk. I'm Acorn and Jordan Flea. We're giving you guys the takes that make you quake, saying it with our chest. Jordan, this is the most wonderful time of the year, as we've said many times coming into this year. It's the NBA Cup. Have we bought into the NBA Cup? We might have. We'll have to wait and see. You've got a lot to talk about here, Jordan. An awesome NBA Cup semifinal round as we preview the NBA Cup final, as well as some injury news over in Cleveland, as well as a final, maybe not a final, but at least a real diagnosis being made to Kristaps Porzingis of the Atlanta Hawks. We'll be talking about that later on in the show. But to just kick it off, Jordan, I got to say, this is maybe the second last episode, maybe third last episode before we will probably take like a little bit of a Christmas break, a holiday break. You know, shout out to everybody out there celebrating Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, any other winter based holiday that I'm unaware of. But this is a time where I'm like, I got to say, I don't know if I said this in the last podcast. I don't think I did. And if I did, it's because it kind of speaks into this. December is such a wash month. I don't care about anything. I think I did say this actually. Yeah. Now that's coming out of my mouth, I did 100% already talk about this. But that's how I feel. Like that's how little prepared I am to come up with something interesting to talk about. I mean, I think that we kind of went through all of our funny juices before we even hit record, talking about these blue collar Santa, gay Santa. Like, there's a lot of different Santas out there. I mean, you just gotta go find your personal best. But I'm very much in the spirit of holidays. I was telling you I got my cruise booked for this March, early spring. I literally for the next 4 months I will not give a fuck about nothing.
Hold on, Matt. I misunderstood you saying that. You're set. You're going on another cruise?
Oh yeah, man.
Holy shit, that's awesome, man.
Every year,
where is
man.
This one though?
Aruba, Bahamas.
Jamaica.
Mama, baby, mama. I actually am going to Aruba, Bahama, Curacao. I think those are the main three.
Made the World Cup.
Yeah, it's true.
Imagine you go there. Oh, no, I was going to say. And they just won draft the World Cup. And no, they'll be prepping for
it. No, they could draft me, man. They're like, hey, young brother.
The boat drops you off.
Brother, you want to play the football?
No.
I could do it.
You could try, though. You could be like that guy on TikTok. Have you seen that guy who's like, my name is blah, 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 and I swear I will be the starting forward for the men's national team. You could be that guy. But yeah, sick. The Curacao version.
There's a lot of actually really funny guys on TikTok that play soccer. What was the guy named? Something like Thane the Dragon or something. I don't know what you're saying. This guy, this British guy with like long red hair. Yeah, he's fucked.
yeah, man. Yeah. No, I agree, though, about December. Like, I implemented a loose, like, Jordan, you don't need to, like, have a few drinks throughout the week.
Oh,
like,
I've been
just
boozing.
Save it more for... You know, but and then the other night we were making dinner and Annie was like, oh, hey, you want some wine or something? And I was like, no, not through the week. I'm like, wait, what am I doing? It's December. Give me that shit. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's out the window for now. But it's fun. It's you know, I'll get back on the horse later on in January. Maybe we'll see. But yeah, it's I'm treating this month like nothing matters. I don't really know what time it is half the time. I went outside. I built a snowman yesterday, Matt.
So, wow.
You know, it's.
You're really in the spirit,
again,
man.
I'm on Christmas break.
Let's go.
It was actually Snow Woman.
Interesting.
Just so you know. Just so everyone knows. Why is everyone making snowmen? Yeah, that, and and a little back.
It was great.
Hey, and some hair. And some hair.
What do you mean a little back? What do you mean by that? Scott had a little bit of backside?
We crafted an ass for our snowboard.
Oh yeah, nice. I like it. Were we thinking more petite but firm, or is this like a big badonkadonk?
No. She was a sizable snowboard.
Oh, yeah.
in all ways.
Like
she was free though. She was at the bottom of the tobogganing hill. All the kids saw the representation. So it doesn't always have to be snowmen. Okay.
Yeah, there we go. Like our snow women BBW.
Yeah.
But let's get into it, Jordan. NBA Cup action. But first, let's take a bite out of an ad read. Everybody knows that Jordan and I love meat. We can't get enough. And that's why we're so excited to be partnered up with Big Fork Brands. Big Fork Brands crafts bacon, sausage, paleo pork jerky, Chicago-style sauces, and meat sticks. In other words, the meats that can't be beat. Not only does the meat over at Big Fork Brands taste amazing, but their pork is 100% made with heritage hogs that are raised outdoors with antibiotics. If you aren't already on their site and loading up your cart with bacon, sausage, paleo pork jerky, and Chicago-style sauces, then you won't have any other choice after this, because Big Fork Brands is giving anyone who uses our exclusive promo BDBT, 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 you hear that? BDBT, a 20% discount on any product. That's right, 20% off when you use our code BDBT. Eat like a big dog. Head to Big Fork Brands today. Use code BDBT and stuff yourself full of our delicious meat, or their delicious meat, whichever you choose. But Jordan, let's get into it. Yeah, we love meat. It's actually one of the easiest gifts you can get anybody. If anyone in my family is listening, everyone's getting meat. talk about NBA Cup, Jordan. I mean, this is actually kind of crazy. I kind of said a little bit there in leading into this. I think I might be into the NBA Cup. I might be into it if the teams want to play as fucking hard as they did this past weekend, man. Because both those games, playoff atmosphere, seemed like they cared. The comparison to that, to what we've been watching for the regular season, it was completely different. And I got to say, if it is the money, if that's what it takes, get these guys' pockets a little fatter. Adam, next year, jack it up. I want to see $100 million on the line between these teams. Let's just fucking go. I want to see the best possible games. And I think the money is what really finally working.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this too, because I totally agree. If it's the money... like you said, make it even more, and we'll just get even more of a guarantee that even like going back to, the cup fucking qualification games, mm-hmm. Whenever those were with the crazy courts, those are maybe closer in intensity to a regular season game. I don't think every team took all of those seriously all the time, mm-hmm. but I think mm-hmm. you did notice a bit of a difference. And especially in those games that like the quarterfinals to send teams to Vegas, even those games were, had good intensity to them. So it's like, yeah, if more money makes those even better, let's do it.
The point differential helped with, just guys wanting to finish strong with a game. They weren't just going to be okay with like a 30-point blowout most of the time.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, that's a good point too. I think it's even like when I was watching the Spurs Thunder game, it felt like more than that. And I'm like, is that like, I think what the cup, I'll give the cup credit for, is that it gives teams like an outlet to be competitive and petty way earlier in the season than usual. Usually you have to wait to the playoffs. Like none of these games mattered, and I think it now that we're kind of giving Adam Silver his flowers, I think it did make sense to put something like, I don't know if I necessarily would have put it like November into December, I guess, when else are you going to put it type of thing? So sure. But like, this early in the season, it's great to have an opportunity to see a guy like Wemby, go out there and actually play a game that means something to him, and like get the rest of the Spurs fired up to beat this juggernaut team, OKC. And then OKC have this pressure to be like, look, we're trying to be one of the best teams ever. If we don't win this, like, what does that say about, the rest of our season? Even though obviously they're coming in having won 16 in a row or whatever, only losing one other time, but it just adds these stakes. And I think those would have been there even without the money. So, maybe that's a bit circumstantial. Maybe that's like, you're not always going to get.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed-sponsored jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed-sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You know, a team like the Spurs that makes it, that, you know, is led by Wemby, that really, really wants to, you know, go and sort of make their mark. They're a young team against this other, you know, juggernaut team that also really cares. But like you said, even on the other side, I think Orlando and New York was a really good game too. Obviously, we're robbed of like the great game because Franz isn't out there playing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some injuries kind of on both sides, or at least, you know, concerns. But the intensity was there and the game was great. And you got a great performance from Jalen Brunson. And like, the Magic were competitive in it and sort of played their style of game. And I think the money is a big part of it. But also, now that it's been around for a couple years, like I do got to say, like, you know, Adam Silver, I think the issues with it remain. I will never, ever think it's smart to not just have your own each conference's division be who you play mm-hmm. in the qualification rounds. That makes zero sense to me, especially like we said, one of these last pods, if you're trying to like build regional rivalries or like historical, like the teams in your conference are the ones you play the most. That's who you should be going up against, or your division, I should say.
Yeah.
That's who you should be going up against to see who advances to the cup. We don't have to make these stupid ass fucking groups of five, but like, if they were to make that change, and again, now that the cup is sort of in the you know, in the mind of the NBA fan, it's like every year on the calendar, it's around, you know, before Christmas, we have this little thing. It does kind of, I don't know, I'm agreeing, I'm coming around to it a little bit more of like, mm-hmm. okay, as long as these teams take it seriously, for whatever those reasons are, whether it is the money or the circumstances, the fact that they did, it's like, yeah. Of course, us NBA fans are going to fucking love it. And that's what we want in any of these conversations. We're going to talk about the All-Star game. We're going to talk about any normal thing. Like, we just want the players to care. I don't care how they care. I don't care if it's money. I don't care if it's fucking whatever they want. Give them whatever they want, or set it up in whatever way you need to make sure they care. But mm-hmm. yeah, that was awesome, especially that capper game that we're going to, you know, dive into.
Yeah.
The second one, Spurs Thunder. That was just incredible intensity, great sort of back and forth game that ended, in a close one, obviously. And it's shout out Adam Silver, man. Maybe have never done that in the history of this podcast.
Yeah, I think so it may be a first. While,
but you did good, buddy.
Yeah.
He'll rub his little bald head.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that he also may have benefited from the four teams being in this, being the ones that they are. They're all, like, they're four of the more competitive teams in the league, and four of the best teams in the league, really, as well. So I think that worked out in his favor overall. And also the fact, I think, both matchups, like, it meant more than, just a regular season game to those teams. They wanted to get that, you know, bragging rights, which also, I just had this idea, an epiphany. I still like your idea. Just do the division games count as your group. But however many there are, what is there? There's four groups in each.
Three
in each conference.
Three divisions of five. Yeah, 15 and then 15 in each conference. Yeah.
That's how it went. Okay.
Right.
Unless
it was four, unless they split it up. Wait, I'm trying to think. No, I think it's five.
Yeah. Cause it was five, East five, and West. And so it has to be.
Yeah.
My idea, I just had it right now. So let's say whatever, the Thunder and Spurs, and then, I don't know, you want to decide who the third team is between, the winners / losers, whatever, of the semifinals. But the three teams, the top three finishing teams for the NBA Cup the year before, they get to draft schoolyard style which teams are in their group. the next season. Yeah, okay. And then they, but it's public. So you see who was like, oh, this team was the, you know, the Wizards were the first team taken. Like, I think that that would kind of make each game have a little bit, because then the players on those shitty teams are like, oh, fuck that. Like, you think we're, you think we're easy money? Like, and then you kind of see the teams that the Wizards, they don't want to play.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. No, that's, I mean, in the same vein of the proposal of, like, you know, in the playoffs, if the top seed could just pick their first round opponent, doesn't have to be the eight seed. Like, they could just pick whoever they want to play. Like, anything like that, I love. Yeah, I think that'd be great as an idea for the cup, because bulletin board material, you know, get even more sort of competitive energy, you know, in it. I like that too, and that's more European soccer style too, which is, you know, what, you know, Adam Silver was inspired by that to even make this thing. But like this. I do think the NBA would benefit from more like carryover year to year. Like, there's so many teams play, you know, for one team and then a different one, you know, the next, you know, more so than that's, you know, that's a generally newer thing. You know, back in the day in the 90s and stuff, you'd have guys were more likely to stay on teams for their whole careers. I know there's a lot of player movement now, but I think sometimes it feels like, to fans, like it doesn't, since every team is so different, it's kind of like hard to follow them, you know, in chunks of years. And I think, anything like that where it's like, okay, going back to last year, like this is sort of a rivalry that we've built on, and, you know, we're picking you in the cup. Like, there's, I like those ideas that sort of, make it feel like
force a rivalry.
It's longer than just one chunk, you know, the chunk that you're watching is longer than just 1 year. So I'm all for that. It was a success this year for sure. No matter what happens in the finals, like, I think this has been the most successful NBA Cup.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
Like I was listening to, you know, some podcast breakdowns and stuff, just the typical, you know, national basketball, or podcast that discussed the NBA type of thing after this game, and everyone was like so like happy to be talking. It was like they were discussing and breaking down a big playoff game.
I was gonna say, last year I don't think we even covered the NBA Cup at all. I don't think it even came across our desk. So
because it's kind of shit when like a crap team makes it through. Like, remember when like the fucking
Pacers Lakers
a few years ago got, and it's like the Pacers turned into a good team, so, you know, that was kind of like, you know, a little bit of a sign. But this year, it's like, no, these four teams are legit playoff teams on either side, and that's going to be more fun.
Too. Yeah, 100%. Well, let's talk about the big Mac Daddy heavyweight matchup that started it off, or capped it off, pardon me. The San Antonio Spurs, OKC Thunder, the 24-2 OKC Thunder. Oh my God, are they cooked? Are they cooked, Chad? Yeah, the done. Thunder might be bad. No, the Spurs, awesome win in this one, 111-109. A back and forth matchup. Victor Wembanyama comes back from injury in this one. And I love that one because there was no reports, no inkling that he was going to be coming back. And then it was like a couple hours before tip off. It was like, hey, Wemby is back tonight. And it's like, oh shit. Like, I got to say, like, again, he's quickly becoming one of my favorite players in the league. Because not just to see like a, you know, this insane, you know, 7'4" 3-point shooting, ball handling, freaking nature we've never seen before. But at the same time, he's also like, he's maybe like one of those last of a dying breed guys that actually gives a shit, like is competitive. Like, he wants the smoke. Like, he is talking after the game about that they play ethical hoops. Like, he's chirping SGA. Yep. He's chirping Chet. Like, he wants to, you know, kind of bring that rivalry back to the league. And I think that the Spurs and the Thunder right now, man, we are like at the precipice of potentially seeing like the next best rivalry. And I hope we do, because we've been longing for a good beef, a good competitive beef in the NBA between two teams. And the timelines line up really well for both these squads. You got two MVPs on each side of it, or at least MVP type players, deep teams, you know, big prospects to watch, young guys, great coaching as well in this one. Like, this is maybe the like, if I had to pick like a Western Conference final, I know Denver's in that mix, Houston's in that mix, but I mean, a Spurs Thunder Conference Finals, man, that might feed some families out there.
No, this was great. And they're, it's true, like, you know, Victor's making the joke about ethical basketball or whatever, like implying that the Spurs do it differently. Like, it's like, you know, he's being kind of petty, and I'm not even 100% sure what what we're talking about in terms of unethical basketball by OKC? Like, is it? I guess it's like SGA's foul baiting and stuff
that
people. But again, I'm like, you know, I don't necessarily fall under that.
You can find like, clips of any player doing shit that SGA does.
Yes. And I think it's not like he's not good outside of that. He's not like he can't get to the mid range and, you know, be an incredible player even without the free throw aspect. But, you know,
Spurs shot five more free throws than the Thunder in this game.
Right. But even the fact that he's joking about it and sort of, you know, bringing that up, it's like, that intensity is great. That real sort of him being a troll is great. You know, a great part of this, like you said, like there's so many guys who are so buttoned up. Like that's the thing about the Thunder. Like they're reminding me of the Spurs in that, like, all the Thunder guys, they always say the right thing. They're not, you know, talking that much trash out there. They don't get in that many, like, you know, altercations or anything.
Chet does up his do-rag, eats his oxtails. Yeah.
Yes. So it's like, you know, that's one way to go about it. But yeah, I love that Victor, and I think it's kind of permeating down through all of the Spurs, you know, the rest of these guys of like, yeah, we're a good up and coming team too, and we're gonna talk, and you know, we're gonna you know, like, play with some emotion out here, which is great to see. I do think it is a bit of a dying art. Like you don't see it that much. I think that the trend has been to sort of, you know, if you're a really good player, like, say less, and like, you know, media training, like, you know, let's just not give anyone else you know, any reason to go off on us on the other side. So I love that attitude. But true, like, it's true that the styles of both of these teams are different enough that it's really interesting. Like, they're both obviously young teams that are play really hard defensively, but you know, the De'Aaron Fox is a very different player than SGA, and you've got these two young like, you know, or this cohort on the Spurs of these young guards that get after it in similar ways to the Thunder guards, but I think more offensively they're more interesting, and you know, they just get downhill and get to the paint. Like Castle is so good at that, and, you know, Dylan Harper already is so good at that.
Dude, I saw NBA the NBA.com MVP ladder had Stephon Castle top three.
MVP?
Yeah, I was really? Like, is that like a NBA Cup MVP? Like, or
maybe.
I don't. Yeah, is that even a thing?
But who the hell? No, probably. He's probably probably the Adams new thing this year.
Yeah.
NBA Cup DPOY.
Yes.
The teams are different too in their style, which is fun. Like, you know, just to watch them sort of clash. But then you also have these things that sort of align perfectly. Like Chet and Wemby is already just a natural like rivalry in how they were sort of described, how they came into the league, and it's like the
same rookie year,
and then you get to see them matched up against each other, and it's like, oh, these guys are so fucking similar. Obviously Wemby's like so much more advanced, but then Chet's the one with the ring, Chet's the one on you know, the team that's much better, and it's like it's so fun to watch them guard each other. And yeah, it was just the intensity in this game was great. And I thought the Spurs really showed that they're legit and should be taken more seriously than I think, you know, people, I think some people have taken them seriously all year, but I think people, even like me, I've been a little bit like trepidatious of like, okay, how real is this? How good are these guys? But even when Wemby was out, they were still winning games, which was crazy. And it's like, okay, if they're going to be good without their defensive anchor, then it's like, yeah, with him back, they're going to be pretty damn scary. They did all this. They win this game with Victor coming off the bench and only playing 21 minutes.
Yep.
I was just super impressed by the Spurs, super impressed by how seriously they took it, how they came out and just took care of business. And OKC is very hard to beat, but they're also like, they're especially hard to beat when you're in the clutch with them. Like the OKC, so they ratchet up the intensity so much, the way they defend, like, okay, see, I love how their secret weapon is if you the other team has like a really good big guy that you OKC throws Caruso on them, and it usually works. Caruso's guarding fucking Wemby down there, you know, at the end of this game, and you know, pokes the ball away from him a couple times on that one shot where he's fading left, but Wemby just rose up over him and just buried that shot, which was huge. Like, and then points at him on his way back down the court. Like, it was very impressive that the Spurs were able to like hold their composure and win this game here. But yeah, I do specifically want to talk about how the game played out in terms of the fouling, because I have thoughts about that at the end of the game. But overall, it was a great close game, and yeah, the Spurs deserve a lot of credit, because you know the Thunder, again, they you know Jalen Williams had a bit of an off night. They weren't exactly you know gangbusters offensively in this one, but you could tell they really wanted this. So to beat the Thunder, who really want it when it's coming down the games in the balance, you got to give the Spurs heck of a lot of credit.
100%. Well, you know, we look at this game as a whole, you know, to take a little bit of a deeper dive into the matchup itself. I mean, this was an awesome game as well. You know, not just Wembanyama coming back, Isaiah Hartenstein back into the lineup for the Thunder as well after he was out for a couple weeks here as well. This was you know, a competitive matchup, but in the beginning it really did look like the Thunder, this was just gonna be a classic Thunder game script, come out, you know, get an early lead, never look back, and then just keep pummeling, and then by the end of the game it's a 30-point win. This was not that case, because even before Wemby came in, because I feel like he didn't play the entire first quarter, if I'm recalling correctly, I believe he came in early second quarter, and you could tell the tone changes when Wemby gets on the court. The Thunder, the buttholes pucker a little bit more. The guys who are on the court with him are a little bit more juiced up. They feel more confident with his presence, knowing that he's there on there. Because, I mean, honestly, if you're playing alongside Wembanyama, like, you probably don't feel any pressure defensively at that point, because, you know, even if you fuck up your matchup, you've got this guy who can make up. He's got great speed, he's got great length, athleticism, you know, whether it's someone in the paint or he's playing help defense along the perimeter, you've got a guy out there that can pick up any kind of slack that you've laid for him. But it was a great back and forth matchup, and when Wemby came in and really just changed the tides, and then the Spurs kind of were fighting. They had a lead at one point, you know, in the third quarter they had that awesome run where they just started lighting it up. She looked like Devin Vassell has had an awesome year. We highlighted him and Keldon Johnson as two guys who kind of really need to find their roles and to find themselves in the league, and I think that Devin Vassell, obviously, much more because you know he's been solid this year. The passing has been a lot better. He's been a better defender. The shooting is sensational. But even Keldon Johnson, you know, it wasn't a standout game for him. But I think he's at least kind of figured out that he is a very strong rebounding wing. You know, he can stretch the floor a little bit. Like, but at least he is figuring out his role. And I've been my coach of the year pick, Mitch Johnson. I think he's got a strong case, because I think he's really help define what these guys are doing, and also, you know, get the most out of this unit. But yeah, that fourth quarter, man, it was highlight play after highlight play. I mean, you know, you talked about the Caruso almost getting the stop on Wemby, hits the crazy turnaround fade. Then he comes back and he has that huge hammer dunk around like 3 or 4 minutes left in the game. SGA was pulling up and hitting shots all game long. It was just insane. But I got to say, for maybe the game of the year to this point, one of the best games of the year, the final, you know, whatever. I mean, it was the final 15 seconds of the game, but it was the final like 10 minutes of the game. They got to figure something out there, because the strategy of fouling when you're up three is pussy shit. That is whack.
New. Do you remember this happening like five plus years ago?
People talked about it.
I didn't even think it was a question.
It's actually, and they push up their fucking glasses. They put away their calculator. They reread the Pythagorean theorem. It's actually smarter if you foul and then you get the ball back and then you just had to hit your feet. Shut the fuck up, nerd. There should be a rule where it's like you can't do that too many times, or it's like you can only foul them when they've gotten across, like they have to be inside the paint, or they have to be, or not in the paint, sorry, inside the perimeter. Like you can't just foul them on the other end of the court and prevent them from taking any shot at all. Like at the end there, the last half court heave, the Thunder literally were trying to like inbound with, they had like 8 seconds left, and they had to do it in the corner of their own side of the court because they didn't want to take it to half, or because they would just get fouled. So that annoys me a little bit as well. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, because I mean, you're trying to watch this game come down to the end and potentially have, you know, witness a shot to win it. You want a shot in the air at the buzzer, you know, type of thing. And yeah, this strategy, like, I don't know if maybe like I don't know if it's a situation where we need to overcorrect it right now, or if doing something to fix it right now would be like too much of an overcorrection. Like,
I blame Chet for missing that one free throw. That's what did it.
Well, honestly. And then, you know, Wemby's fucking screaming as he grabs the ball, which I love it. Like,
that rivalry is very incredible. One-sided. I got to say, it is so one-sided.
Well,
like Wemby.
Well, you say that, but you know, Chet's got the ring. He'll always, you know, quietly point
second
to it. I
mean, fiddle though.
Yeah,
like it's the argument. No, I think I'm team Wemby. I gotta be team Wemby. I gotta be honest. He's been bitching him around when they play head to head. He bitches him. They had that one game in the rookie years, and he fucking swatted the shit out of him.
Yeah, no, it's true. But hey, Chet might have two fucking rings. You know, by next year,
might even get the DPOY.
Yeah. So you know, but it's a good rivalry either way. Yes, 100%. I'm probably team Wemby also. But it might be a situation though where we got to just let this play out for a little bit. And because I think this is going to bite teams in the ass, like doing this. Like, I don't think it's as smart as it's made out to be, which is why I feel so surprised that people are so okay doing it.
Well, you're banking that you can hit the free throw.
Well yeah, but you're also giving the other team 2 free points at the end of a close game. Like, if you're going to say, okay, yeah, we're not going to let them take we would rather them take 2 free throws and then potentially foul us and get the fucking ball back. We're banking on us having to hit free throws. Exactly.
God forbid you turn it over.
You turn it over anything. And it's like, it's a really risky strategy. I also just want, in those situations, I kind of want the refs to be like, look, if that fucking player, that offensive player is even close to their shooting motion, we're giving them those 3 fucking free throws. Because that's the other thing too, of like, you're trying to foul. It's really hard to, if a player is squared up to you and you're trying to foul, that offensive player can see and anticipate you reaching in, and they can pretty easily like rise up and try and draw that foul. And the refs, I think in other situations in the game are trying to cut down on that. Like, they already, you know, the fucking from 10 whatever years ago or less, the Carmelo fucking sweep through rule, where like if someone's guarding you and their hands out and you sweep through to go up for your shot, that used to be one you could get 2 shots out of, but now that's automatically on the side. Like, I think the refs are trying to cut down on you know, calling things as shooting fouls, but I think in that circumstance, as long as you make it so that the defensive player is really fucking like, they don't want to commit that foul, because then if you rise up, you're going to be giving away 3 free throws anyway. That could maybe solve it. But like, whatever they do, I've heard people discuss, like, you know, under a certain amount of time on the clock, you can't allow those sort of take fouls, or like a take foul is like 2 in the ball. I don't know how you do that though, because there are circumstances where you need fouling at the end of a game. Otherwise, the team's just going to run out the clock. Like, if they're ahead, you still have to be able to foul. You know, if you're a defensive team, to extend the game. But I do not like the fouling up 3. I hate it. I think it ruins. Like, people were already complaining about how NBA games are kind of the pace of it is slow at the end. If there's fouling, it turns into a free throw competition. This makes it even worse. And so yeah, I think. That something needs to be done if this goes on for too much longer. But again, I'm hoping this kind of weeds itself out a little bit. And I don't think it's a thing where every coach is going to do it. Clearly, you know, Mitch Johnson likes the strategy, but like, even in the end here, like, you know, they're playing around with that shit. It could have been like, that was a sort of successful missed free throw by Jalen Williams at the end. Caruso got his hands on that ball as he was falling out of
the
bounds.
They wanted the foul
call. Were only down 2. Yeah, and it's like, that could have gone any way. Like, if there was a few seconds left, I think, like, you know, Hartenstein was in there, he could have got it. But my last thing in terms of strategy about that part of the game that I wanted to mention too is that I think missing free throws intentionally needs to be like something these guys practice more.
Yes.
To me, that's like an underused strategy.
Well, he made
like
Jalen Williams the first time he tried to miss one.
The first
did
one he
make
made
one.
It. Yeah, because he's trying to miss it, like, send the ball high and like get it to hit back rim and then come out high again, so that guys, you know, and I get that sometimes that's right. But most of the time when you're trying to miss a free throw, you're doing it because you need 3 or, you know, are looking for a 3 ideally, or you just don't have enough time. Cause when you send the ball up like that and it hits back rim or whatever, it's going to come up high again. And then it's going to be like a battle to grab the rebound. whoever is going to get it isn't going to get it cleanly.
No.
And then you're going to be like fighting for it for that second, and then you're not going to get a shot off.
I was going to say, a lot of time comes off the clock.
Yeah, I like the Westbrook or the, what Cade did earlier this year, where you throw it perfectly at the front of the rim,
yep,
and it comes right back to you, and then you can put it back up, you can kick it out to three. So
that, I like that we both, people, I was going to say the Westbrook off the front of the rim. That's kind of his icon. Yeah. He did that quite a few times.
Yeah. And I don't think it's that hard. Like, I know sometimes if you don't get it right, it's going to, you know, spin off and it's not going to work. But like, you know, you're if you practice it a few times, you know, it should be something that you're willing to do. Cause that was the situation for that. Not a high banker that went up. Like, even though, again, Caruso got his hands on it, he was falling out of bounds. It wasn't really going to, you know, result in a good shot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other thing, you know, at the end of practice, get all these players, practice their front rim intentional missed free throws.
Yeah, well, we'll keep a close eye on how the NBA wants to handle these foul up three strategies.
And also give them less timeouts. We don't need so many goddamn timeouts. Yeah. I've been saying this for years. I know it's probably to do with commercials or whatever, but just give these teams, honestly, like two less timeouts in the second half. The game will be way more fun in the last 30 seconds.
Yeah, but shout out to the Spurs, taking down the Thunder, giving them their second loss of the season as they chase history, looking for that 74-8 season. Still in play, still very much in play, that's a big loss to take. Moving on, though, let's talk about the Eastern Conference game there, Jordan, the NBA Cup. New York Knicks taking down the Orlando Magic, and what was also a very competitive, very exciting game. You know, maybe the rivalry wasn't quite as established as the Spurs and Thunder, but this was a good one. Both teams, I think this is more of a classic Eastern Conference basketball matchup. It was a little bit more nitty gritty, a little more physical. You know, the action was, honestly, just as fast, I thought, as the Thunder and Spurs at times. A lot of great fast breaks, awesome passing from both teams throughout. But in the end, the Knicks outlast the Magic and really just kind of beat them due to superior health. I mean, this Magic team, unfortunately, just cannot stay healthy. I mean, Jalen Suggs was having a fantastic game, had 26 points, 7 assists in 29 minutes, and then he has to bow out early in this one due to an ongoing lower body injury, and it's just, it really sucks to see because, you know, one thing I did like, you know, Jace Richardson actually got some burn. He played really well in that fourth quarter and was guarding Brunson for a good chunk of this game as well. I love to see him getting some burn. But overall, yeah, it does suck to see this Magic team with so much potential not really get to ever have a chance to live up to it. Because, you know, we were already talking about it, you know, earlier you mentioned it, Franz Wagner, he's out with the high ankle sprain. This is a team that we just never get to see them fully put together against teams like the Knicks, like they could really be like, you know, we said the last podcast, you know, can the Magic compete in the Eastern Conference? I think they can if they're fully healthy. But my other gripe, and specifically in this game, because if you look at if you're just a box score watcher, you know, you look at the stats, okay, 25 points and 8 rebounds, it's a pretty solid game. Paolo Banchero has to be a lot better. I think if you were supposed to be highlighting him as your franchise guy, he's got to be a whole lot better. Like, the stats are one thing. I felt like at times I was like, is he even on the court? Like, he really floats through the game sometimes, and he doesn't really have that takeover ability. He doesn't have that killer instinct, I don't think, right now, to just go out there. And again, he's 6'8", like 225, 235. Like, he has a perfect NBA frame. He should be able to go out there and just start, you know, trying to take it to the rim, be aggressive. But he just doesn't have that jump shooting ability. And the Knicks are so, so good at defending guys like that, that, you know, he just kind of walked into the torture chamber every single time he touched the rock. And again, yeah, he still finished with 25 points, 0-7 from 3, though. And I think that, you know, if you're really going to highlight a reason why the Magic weren't able to pull this one out, I would just say, Paolo Banchero just is not the big dog on this team, unfortunately. But again, even with the injury to Suggs, even with Banchero, you know, mediocre play, the Knicks do deserve a whole whack load of credit, looking like, again, potentially the best team in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, we already know Jalen Brunson, 40 points, amazing game from him. Cat had a great game as well. But, like, I got to say, the second unit of the Knicks, something that we haven't seen anything of in the last couple seasons, you know, Tibbs never let them play, never let them see the light of day. Like, Yes. Mitch Robinson, probably you know, if he can get enough games under his belt this season, he'll be in the sixth man of the year discussion, I believe. I think he should be. Yes. Stan Van Gundy actually brought up something that we've been talking about for years on this podcast, that big men, backup bigs, need more love in the sixth man of the year discussion. Great call out there by Stan, who I thought him and Dwayne Wade were really great on the call as well. I actually enjoyed their insights.
I enjoyed it too, but for some reason, the portion of the game that I was like tuned into most intently, Stan was taking up a lot of that mic. Stan was talking a lot, and I know
the Van Gundys like to talk.
They do. I'm like, Stan, maybe let the Hall of Famer get a few more mm-hmm. words in. But overall, I like it. I agree.
But yeah, I think good duo. The bench of Mitch Robinson, Tyler Kolek has come on strong and looked really solid this year. Jordan Clarkson, obviously a former Sixth Man of the Year winner back in the day, and then you don't even have Deuce McBride in this one. I think they've got a lot of great depth. I think they've got star power. The Knicks look legit right now, Jordan, but the Magic, again, it's a what if situation.
Yes. And I talked about Paolo, like Franz flat out, I think this year has been better than Paolo.
100% agree. Yeah. Unfortunately, I've been a Paolo guy.
Yep. And last year it looked like Paolo, it's like, can Paolo be like fucking lock all NBA, like in the MVP discussion right early on?
He was my MVP pick game this year.
Yeah, but that's not even crazy because like he has all those sort of skills, and finally there was a good team around him. Like that made sense to me. But yeah, he's just, again, you look at the raw stats, or like you said, 25-8 sounds really good, but yeah, 10 for 22, that's a lot of shots to miss. That's a lot of of the offense to sort of gobble up yourself. And I think Franz is just further along as a playmaker. Like efficiency in the offense isn't just the shots you take and make. Like you can be not that good of an offensive engine, I would say, and still go out and have a good shooting game. And it's like, oh, look, he's super efficient. But it's like efficiency is about knowing when you should take a shot and being able to efficiently create shots for other people. And I just don't think Paolo's there at his point in his sort of development. Like he kind of he looks a little, Julius Randle type ball stopper to me a little bit too much of the time, where it's like, yes, we get it. You're really skilled. You've got you've got a pretty deep bag of moves, but like, I think he's got to figure out how to draw defenses in and then kick that ball out and let it swing around and use his big body, actually get closer to the rim to, make that where he operates a little bit more.
And if you're playing the Knicks, one of the best defenses in the league, you got to do that. You can't just be stagnant.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think he has a lot of games like that where you look at it, it's like, oh yeah, he's 28 points, whatever. Under the surface, I think he is kind of hindering a lot of what they can do. And it's not a coincidence that the Magic actually first started coming on when he was out. Like I don't think they're better when he's not there, in terms of what their ceiling is. Obviously they're better with Banchero in the lineup, but he's still got a ways to go, and I think Franz is a little bit further on that that path to being that really good sort of hub. And again, it's like, this is so frustrating because you still never see the two of them out there together. I swear to God, it feels like they play two games and then one of them goes out, and they keep flip flopping, so the Magic sort of stay afloat, and it keeps being these conversations of like, oh, this guy's really effective at doing this. And this guy's like, they got to play together at some point here, unless you want to pull the plug on this and trade one of them. That might be the route that they have to take down the line here. But again, it's hard to even make that call when you haven't seen them together for any sort of extended stretch. And like you said, Suggs goes out. That really was another sort of annoying thing to see, because he was playing amazing. He was a fucking +8, which was best in that starting lineup for the entirety of the game. He was having an efficient game, like you said. He was spraying it around to people too. Like, he's really improved. Talk about like playmaking, developing that side of things. Like, I think he's really come into his own, and having Bain next to him just makes so much sense, and it works so well. They put up a good fight, but again, if you're dealing with that many injuries and you've got that many obstacles thrown at you, the Knicks are really good. They're going to make you pay in the end. Mm-hmm. And I do think, like you said, Jace Richardson came in there, did his best, and I thought he did decently, but You know, Brunson had himself a night. Brunson was you know, going to be denied here. And, you know, that's something the Magic got to make sure that they can do. I mean, the likelihood of them, if they're making a deep playoff run, coming up against the Knicks at some point in a series is pretty high. And you've got to be able to at least have a chance of containing Jalen Brunson. That's easier said than done, but, you know, you need Suggs out there to do that, I think. And, you know, combo of Suggs and Bane and, you know, Anthony Black a little bit, but on this night, it's, you know, no matter who was out there, Brunson was, you know, really lighting them up.
Well, then
he's going to do that.
Put Black on the floor with that yes. awesome step back three. That was a clean ankle breaker. Love to see that.
Yeah.
But I mean, they brought it up. Like, I mean, is Jalen Brunson a legitimate MVP candidate right now? Because, you know, you look at the Knicks, they're one of the best teams in the NBA outright, you know, top two in the East. I know he's floated. I believe he was your MVP pick last year.
He was, yes.
I think if he's scoring enough, if the Knicks can finish first in the East, I mean, I think that right now you kind of look at a guy like that and it's like, could he finally be that, like, true little guy? Because, again, Steph, I get people call him a little guy. I don't know. He's kind of like Steve Nash. Like, I feel like you're tall, just tall enough that you're not a little guy. You're too tall to be a little guy. But 28 points, 6 assists, and he's shooting decent splits here, 48 from the field, 37 from three, and he's high usage rate as well. I think that, you know, I do believe that he deserves some MVP consideration.
Yeah, 100%. I think that, exactly like you said, if the Knicks are the one seed, he's going to be in there. He's going to be in that top five. He might have been in that top five anyway, like, you know, of MVP, you know, on people's MVP ballots, because, like, again, like, you look around this team and it's not just, you know, who's the best player that year. It's who's, you know, arguably, let's say, the best player that year, but who was also the most valuable to their team.
Yep.
If Brunson's not on the Knicks, this team would absolutely fall apart. They'd have no one to, you know, initiate anything. You know, you throw Deuce McBride in there in his place. Hypothetically, maybe you could win a few games against, you know, subpar teams, but like the drop off from what the Knicks are with or without Brunson is humongous. So yeah, I like that. And again, that's why humongous. I picked him. That's why I picked him last year, because I thought it would be a situation that sort of played out like that, where it's like, if the Knicks are one of the best teams in the league, Brunson is just as important to his squad as any of these, you know, big players are to their teams. And it's like, yeah, it's and again, he just, I don't even know how he is, like, his mid-range is literally automatic. Like, when he gets to his spot, like, if he has any space at all, it's just bottom every fucking time. The craftiness to be able to get to the rim at that size and actually finish is crazy too. And again, hit a couple threes. Like you said, you know, when the step back's working, like, he has mastered the art of, like, crafty offensive, you know, off the dribble play. Like,
yeah, even, like, in the paint.
And he's still underrated, I feel like, because he kind of does it. He doesn't do it in that many flashy ways. He's never fucking going to dunk on guys. And he doesn't have that, like, under the rim crazy finishing highlights like a Kyrie or something.
Yeah.
But everything he does, it's just as effective. And it's like, it's crazy. He's truly one of the best, you know, guards in the league, and has kept up this level of play now for, you know, a few years. It's been so impressive. And just overall, like, if he's given you 40 and, you know, that in that starting lineup, which has been so good with Josh Hart in there this year, who's having an incredible stretch of basketball right now. And, you know, with Bridges and OG obviously as well. Mm-hmm. And then Kat, who had a good game in this one, like, That starting five, that is a tough, you know, the idea of beating that team is a tough one. And you know, they've got good balance offensively and defensively. Again, I still think they could use more offensive creators outside of just Jalen Brunson. Again, we go back to the Cat trade when they gave up DiVincenzo. I was like, okay, that's a little risky to me because they don't have many guys off the dribble. But I think they're doing it more by committee this year and taking pressure off of him. Off of Brunson as a group. I think Mike Brown's generally better at taking pressure off of people in general than Tibbs, who, again, pressure is not even, didn't come into Tibbs' mind, like playing guys too much or, you know, putting too much on their plate. That wasn't, you know, in his vocabulary. But now
Josh,
I think,
you
like
play
you mentioned,
44
Kolek,
minutes.
Get back out there. Kolek, you know, he's a big help too. And honestly, if McBride is out and that's giving Kolek some run here and some burn, or Jordan Clarkson, whoever you want to play more in that, you know, primary guard spot, like, I think that's honestly, like a really good for the playoffs and, you know, down the stretch of the season, just for Mike Brown to have more options at guard, to have guys he trusts to throw in that playoff rotation. If Brunson needs a rest, to actually come out and run things. So I really, you know, this was an impressive win by the Knicks. They've looked good all season long, and it was an impressive win to go into Toronto and beat the Raptors to get to this semifinal as well. To me, the Knicks are still very much looking like the team. Like, I picked them to come out of the East. I think that is, I think they've got to be the front runner. They've got to be the favorite to do that, because they're looking really, really good.
Yeah, they're peaking at a really good time of the season, and things, yeah, just starting to click right now for the Knicks. We'll see if they can catch the Pistons, and we'll see if they can catch the NBA Cup. I mean, Jordan, let's lay it out there. Rematch of the 1999 NBA Finals.
Yes.
Who you got? Correct. Yeah. San Antonio Spurs, New York Knicks.
I think it's going to be a great game. I wonder who the Knicks are going to put on Wemby. That'll be fun. Like, I don't think they're going to do Towns, primarily.
I don't know, man. Josh, he's the Jokic stopper. Maybe he'll be the Wemby stopper.
That would be incredible. If he just somehow gets, incredibly agile and athletic.
Good at defending elite bigs.
Yes.
Just
yes,
happens yes. to play in the era where there's like four of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's going to be interesting. Just to see what Wemby does. I think, like, you talk about Brunson, being really good at operating and, how easily he sort of got to his spots in this game. He's going up against, guys like Castle, some of these other, defensive guards on the Spurs. I think, though, he's crafty enough to sort of overcome that. So I think Brunson's going to have another good game. But again, on the other side, I think Wemby's going to be hard to contain. So I think we're going to get it. I think we're going to get a close one.
You can get another classic.
I think experience is going to win out here. And I think I think the Knicks are going to do just enough and they're going to win by like 10. I'm going to say they're going to pull away at the end. Knicks, in a competitive game, Knicks win. That's what my prediction
here. Yeah. That's kind of the key that I was looking at there too. Like, I just feel like no matter what, Brunson is going to kind of have his points. He's going to get to the line. He's going to figure it out. And Wemby also, again, like we said, played 21 minutes in that first game. I don't know how much of a minute restriction he's going to be on in this one, if at all. Yeah. But if he's not playing full minutes, I think that's going to always be kind of tough. And then you factor in the Dylan Harper had a really rough game in, against OKC. You're going up against an equally, maybe not equally, but another really, really tough defensive team. I think that those young guards in Castle and even De'Aaron Fox, I think this will be a really tough game for him as well. I think those the three-headed monster of those guards there are going to have a tough time against Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, Josh Hart. So I'm also going to go rolling with the Knicks to pull off the win here against the Spurs and win the NBA Cup. So we will see if our predictions come true. But first, before we end up the podcast, Jordan, we got some news to actually break down. We got some things to talk about here. We haven't talked about this team in a little bit, and I don't think the last time we talked about them it was in a good light either. But sad news here out of Cleveland. An unfortunate injury happening now to Evan Mobley, as he will be out 1 to 2 weeks with a lower body injury. And the Cavs also just lost an overtime game. Pardon me, it's 2 to 4 weeks with a calf strain, and he will be out as the Cavs continue to kind of sink farther and farther in the Eastern Conference, losing in overtime to the Charlotte Hornets on Saturday night, or Sunday night, pardon me. And they were getting booed off the court, and this is a really concerning juncture in the season now for the Cavs. Jared Allen also dealing with injury throughout the season. So now you're relying on Donovan Mitchell, here and there, appearance from Darius Garland. Is it time to hit the panic button here for the Cavs? 15-12, eighth in the Eastern Conference, Jordan.
I actually think it is, because I don't think it's about injuries at this point. Like, I think they've had enough time with enough of their guys in the lineup that there should have been some sign that, like, oh no, we still have what we had last year, which was a super dominant offensive team that will out execute you specifically offensively, and then we're a pretty damn good defensive team too when we've got our two bigs and when we've got everyone in the lineup. And it's like, everyone was still searching for that, the sign that that team still existed this year. And it's like everyone kept using injuries as an excuse. Like, oh, the Garland's not there. He makes this whole thing run. I get it. You know, and then, you know, Mobley missed his time. Whoever else missed his time. Strus is still not there. He's one of their bigger sort of or more important wing players. Still mm-hmm. not played this year. And mm-hmm. it's like, I think we've seen enough now, though. We have seen Garland in the lineup. We have seen these guys, you know, most of this team back at certain points. And they've still looked just kind of sluggish. Like, I think, I don't want to use the word like figured out, but I think when you're going up against Donovan Mitchell and like you do it enough sort of in with this Cavs lineup that they've put out there on the floor, you know, most of the time over the last couple of years, it's like, I think he's a little easier to game plan against than some of these other, you know, superstars in the league.
I don't think that's crazy to say, man. All-star. Charlotte Hornets like fucking made him shoot 6 or 24.
Yeah, and that's the thing. He goes back to sort of those Utah days a little bit, where you can sort of coax him into trying to take over the game. And I think that was what was really good about the Cavs last year, is that he kind of took a step back. All of his counting stats went down. And but the Cavs are so much better because he was like, I'm going to let Garland really run these pick and rolls and run the show and get the offense moving. I'm going to more so pick my spots. And we are going to be just this team that sprays it around, finds shooters wherever they are. They're not really playing like that anymore this year. Mm-hmm. They're it's a lot of sort of one-on-one attacking and Donovan Mitchell having to do this heavy lifting. And again, part of that is because of the injuries, because Garland wasn't there, but they haven't like adjusted to it even when he's come back and started playing that, you know, pleasing, you know, beautiful game brand of basketball anymore. They're just still doing this kind of, you know, that herky jerky sort of one-on-one kind of stagnant offensive stuff that's not working extra. It's also not working because Evan Mobley has also hit this kind of developmental wall offensively. Like Evan Mobley's not having a good year, just flat out. Like he's okay. And again, he's out with injury now, but when he's played, like he's still okay defensively, but offensively he's just doesn't have that bag, that ability to go and score one-on-one. So again, if you're not going to be like shifting the defenses around and playing in that way that you're getting good shots for everyone, and you're just relying on this, okay, we're either going to have Evan Mobley or Donovan Mitchell sort of try and attack the defense and break them down one-on-one. Both of those guys, I don't think, like, that's not that scary of an offensive tandem to me for a lot of different reasons. And then you're not getting contributions from these other guys. I mean, I still think that having Mobley and Allen as your sort of primary front court just clogs things up, and it just is just not a great.
Please listen to their talents. Any fucking podcast we've done over the last two years to get our take on this front court fit and back court fit.
Yes. So that's still there, and so yeah, it's definitely partially injuries, but I'm ready to say this is more of like a panic situation because I don't think that's all that it is, and you go back to how these guys have bowed out in the playoffs the last couple of years. Yep. It's been bad. Yep. It has been in very bad fashion.
Well, last year was the worst.
Yeah. And again, people get made injuries the sort of, main thing last year. And I'm like, they got wiped. They got fucking destroyed by Indiana in those games that Indiana won. Like that was a 5-game series, wasn't it? I swear they only won one game.
I don't think it was close. I think it was that first game Tyrese hit the buzzer beater and then their spirit just broke.
Yeah. And their spirit, well, not their spirit broke, but a couple years ago against Orlando. Yes. And this is the Cavs team has kind of regressed to more so the offense they were doing in that series and sort of flashing. Mm-hmm. And it's like this fucking bang your head against the wall. Like this, I can't take this anymore. This very stagnant, like So I am definitely worried about the Cavs. We'll see if they can turn it around here. I think Strus is more important to them than people realize, and the fact that they don't have that sort of more reliable guy on the wing, but he's not solving all their problems. And when I think about it, it's all the injuries people are making excuses for. I'm like, that guy's not solving all their problems here. There's big problems here that are not going to just be solved by everyone coming back. So we'll see if they do look any different if they do get everyone back for a stretch. But I don't think they look like a contender right now, not to me.
Well, it does suck as well. Like, they're not even going to have their hands forced to make a move or make a change. They're just going to keep rocking with this because obviously they've committed to it. Because, like, as bad as it is, they're only a game away from the third seed right now. Like, the Eastern Conference is so competitive. third through nine is separated by one game. Like even right now, like they could be the 60. They just have the tiebreaker loss to the Sixers and the Heat, where they're tied with. They're a half game behind the Magic and the Raptors, one game behind the Celtics. So like with a two game winning streak, and they're back in the top three, and they're back at where they want to be. Like it's just how this all is going to jumble out. Like I don't think the trust factor for this team for me right now is very low. So it's like, while they have the potential based on their record to, be in that top six and not have to go through the play-in, it could still get a home court matchup for the first round of the playoffs. Like, even when the playoffs start in a seven-game series against some of these teams in the East, I really think that I'm just kind of like, I'm over them. Like, eventually, like you said, I think that, you didn't want to put that tag, but I do also, I think it's fine. Like, I think you can say that the league has kind of figured out the Cavs. I think they kind of understand what they're going to get. Like, things have not changed or evolved or been altered over the last couple of years. And like, even their role players, like Jalen Tyson, they're bringing these guys in, Tomlin, like they're bringing these guys in that are, they're just like, hey, this is the role that we had Isaac Okoro play. This is the role that we had Ty Jerome play. Like, they just are, here you go, do exactly what these guys did. Like, they're not even trying to like switch it up by being like, hey, this is your talent, this is what you're good at, let's try and mix this into our strategy. They're just rolling out a carbon copy of what they've done. And like you said, bang your head against the wall. I don't know who said it, but definition of insanity is just doing the same thing, expecting a different result. And that's kind of what the Cavs are at.
Was that Einstein? Benjamin Frank, one of these fucking
Ben
guys.
Ben Frank.
Yeah.
How about Teddy Shakes?
No, Edison. Someone, Alex, fact check who the fuck said that, please.
Teddy Shakes.
Get back to us. It's true. Like, I think, I don't know. It doesn't even matter to me if they were to fully unlock the type of offense that they played last year, because that went to shit in the playoffs. That's not an offense that you can rely on, reliably in the playoffs. You have to, at the end of the day, in the playoffs, you're going to, at some point, have to look the other team's two best players in their eyes and feel like your two best players can go toe-to-toe with them in a lot of one-on-one situations, or at least, half court situations where things slow down. And I just do not think that the Cavs have figured out a way to play good, efficient half court offense. And it's because their spacing is all fucked up, because their best players, two of their four best players, are two bigs who don't stretch the floor hardly at all. Evan Mobley has not added that to his game, even though that was supposed to be the whole ideal. And then even the backcourt isn't a perfect fit because they're both small. And then even the wing that they throw in between those two, and they've been searching for it. I know they traded for DeAndre Hunter. He hasn't been perfect, though. He hasn't been like the perfect guy. He's not
really
like,
bad game in that last one.
Yeah, and I don't think he just I think physically he's the guy you need, but IQ wise, how you actually want to play, like in terms of playmaking and getting efficient shots and knowing exactly what to do, I think he's just lacking there. So again, you can't scheme your way out of bad spacing, or the players that you have, your five best players not fitting well. You cannot just like fully get rid of that. And the playoffs are the ultimate truth teller. And it's like, I don't really even care what happens to the Cavs in the regular season. They could win 60 games again. Mm-hmm. Show me how this is going to work in the playoffs, because I still haven't seen it. And that's just how I feel. I think they're a mediocre team that's kind of masquerading as one of the better teams in the East. And I don't think they touch the Knicks. I don't think they even touch the Magic if they're fully healthy.
Pistons.
Some of these other teams, like Pistons either. Yeah, I think the Pistons have leapfrogged them for sure, for me.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep a close eye on the Cavs, and we'll see how they fare without Evan Mobley in the lineup for potentially the next month, which could be really be telling of how the season will play out. I'll say they're lucky that Giannis is out when he's out, and also disgruntled the time he's disgruntled, because the Bucks could have been ready to come back and grab them. But keep a close eye on the Cavs. And to finish off, Jordan, let's do Big Dog MD, Big Dog's Anatomy, AYO. Let's talk about it. Kristaps Porzingis, the mystery illness. Finally, seems like we have a diagnosis, Jordan. He will be out 2 weeks as he is getting treatment for this ailment. Jordan, here we go. I'm going to try this on. Tell me if it sounds like I could have went to med school with this pronunciation.
Here we go.
Porzingis has been diagnosed with postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, or POTS.
Yeah, I know what that is.
Yeah,
right?
you got it. which is obviously a disorder of the nervous system that causes an increased heart rate, lightheadedness, among other symptoms when the person is standing. I got to say, so I did a little bit of work, like research into this just very briefly. Like I just Googled what the symptoms were. I Googled what the treatments are. Just like very basic baseline, whatever, how to treat this. So Porzingis has been dealing with this since he was in Boston, and it kept him in and out of the lineup. Even in the NBA fucking finals, he was dealing with shit like this. So this has been a long time coming to be at this diagnosis. Glad that he's getting that treatment. They can figure it out and actually target things now that he's, you know, got the named or whatever's happening. But from what I read, I don't want to call him soft. I don't want to go and do this because I don't experience this. I don't have this illness. I don't know anyone who does. But your heartbeat increases by up to 30 beats per minute when you stand. Like, it's very sudden. It's a weird blood circulation thing. And you can feel lightheaded, feel dizzy, you can get shortness of breath. Okay. But that doesn't sound like that's that doesn't sound like something that should keep you out of playing basketball for that long. I mean, like I looked it up, and this is the funniest thing. So I look up is exercise bad, or can, like, is it hard to exercise with this? Because I was like, oh, maybe, you know, the heart rate goes up too much, you get tired quicker. Like, is that part of it? Notice it says one of the best solutions, and things you can do to help with this POTS is exercise, is cardio exercise. You're a professional athlete. How the fuck does this make any sense? Like, that's what I'm so confused about. It's like, okay, yeah, I can understand you have this ailment, but it's like, if one of the best ways to better yourself and treat it is exercise and cardio,
you're making it,
how the fuck did you even get it?
You're making it worse by sitting out, man. That's why. That's what's worsening this thing. You got to play, man.
Yeah.
We want you to get better.
Exactly.
Get on the court.
So I'm a little confused by it. I'm hoping that, you know, maybe they'll get him on the bike. Maybe they'll get him swimming. I don't know. But apparently this can be, you know, be caused from like infections or disease. I've seen that a lot of it is it can come from surgery. We know Porzingis has had his fair share of going under the knife. So I don't know if maybe that triggered something. I'm not sure. But Porzingis, yeah, finally gets that diagnosis, and hopefully we'll get treated and we'll actually be able to see him stay on the court for a long period of time. Because I swear to God, like, he's literally in the lineup for two games, out of the lineup for five, and then he's back in, he's back out. Like, it's just been, and that's how it's been again for over a year now. So again, I'm sure it's been frustrating for him. But yeah, I'm glad that we got a diagnosis. But yeah, Porzingis, just you're lightheaded. Ooh, you stand in the fucking corner and shoot threes. Is it that big of a deal?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, maybe he's not getting enough burn, like, on the court. Like, he's not exercising enough. It's like, we need you to be more of a rim runner, Chris Stapps. Go back to, you know, early New York days.
Get
your heart rate up even more.
Get treated for the same shit that happens when I stand up after sitting on the couch and drinking beer all day on an NFL
yes,
Sunday.
Exactly.
I got the same thing, Porzingis.
Yeah, yeah, but that doesn't stop Matt from you know, doing his job.
Yeah, exactly.
Chris Stapps, you got it. Yeah, and it's tough though too, because it's like, this guy's just dealt with so many injuries over there. I mean, remember when the Celtics even traded for him? It's like, okay, good luck getting even a full season out of him. Turns out that was right. They just happened to be able to have enough pieces to win even without him. But if they were really relying on him, think about it. You know, he missed most of those playoffs that year.
Two games in the finals?
Yeah, and again, he was good when he came back, because there wasn't a lot of pressure on him, and they were already fucking winning even without him.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just what it is with this guy. Yeah, the fact that it happens to be lightheadedness syndrome, you know, we might get emails from, like, the POTS Society of America.
Yeah, but guys, you know what? There's also a lot of people who have, like, illnesses and whatever disease, and they're all a bunch of pussies, and they just whine, my sclerosis, it's ailing me. Oh, I have shingles.
Yeah,
Shut the fuck up.
Who's that guy in... The guy in the Lakers. I've got sciatica. I've got
yeah, well, whatever that guy's name is.
I'm feeling a little old. I'm a little sore today.
I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, 41 year old.
Take your gross ass feet somewhere else.
Yeah.
Ailing back.
You know, Kristaps is 30 now. So it's like, he's a 30 year old with POTS. Maybe just hang it up, man. Hang up those POTS, Kristaps. I don't think this is going to work.
Whatever happened to being a man?
It's just, I don't know. Genuinely though, I don't know if like, the fact that this is dragged on like this, and now it's like a diagnosed thing, like, if he's ever going to get back and play, like, proper stretches of basketball at this point, like, the especially if you're like a unicorn freak of nature like him. Like the, these guys with the – you go back to fucking Bull Bull and all these guys that we're talking about who have these massive fucking limbs and are 7 feet tall plus – Their careers tend to be, you know, on the shorter side, you know, if you're looking at sort of the average and like, especially when you've, like you said, this Kristaps has had so many injuries, so many, you know, things he's had to deal with. This is seemingly just kind of part of the trend. And I don't know if it's ever going to be, you know, a situation where he comes back and is like one of the two or three best relied upon players on like a really good team, like playing 65 plus games. I don't see it in the future for Tingus Pingus, but. Hopefully just get out there and exercise, man. That's you've literally figure got your fucking you've got your doctor's orders right there. Go exercise. Good thing you play basketball for a living. You're good.
Exactly. I just miss the days, but it's not like he doesn't have fucking access to like the best like athletic therapist in the world probably. I don't understand that. I kind of miss the days when it's like when you get sick or you have some kind of ailment, you literally like a sick dog or a cat, you just hide it for as long as you can until you unexpectedly die at 50. That's how a man should act.
Yes, yes. You go on your own, you either come back, you know, like fucking, you know, fucking like a zombie, you're back somehow, you get over it or you die. Yeah, that's
yeah, you fucking crash like your car a couple times, you pass out like from pain, and then people are like, oh, are you okay? And you're like, don't worry about it, it's nothing. And then day you're dead. That's how you go. That's what men.
Yeah. Oh man, it's true. I mean, again, the other thing just of Kristaps even on this Hawks team, like I feel like they've already learned to live without him. This happens with
Kongu's better than him
the
right
last
now.
Few times. Well, yeah, exactly. So you know, he doesn't have that much pressure to come back. It would be nice, but get well soon, Kristaps.
Yes, I mean, do get well, but be a man. If you guys think that Porzingis needs to be treated better, and you guys have some medical insight that we don't, get at us at Big Dog Ball Talk, Instagram, TikTok, X. Facebook for all the old heads out there. Help us to help you, to help us to help you. Let us know. Give us your take on the NBA Cup final as well. Who you got? Spurs, Knicks. Let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk. And we will be back recapping all the action later this week, Thursday, Friday. Keep a lookout. It's a holiday schedule, which means that Jordan and I will upload when we can and when we feel like it. So be on the lookout for that. And this may be a bunch of. And as my good friend Jordan always says,
Matt, like I told you before we logged on, everyone wants to be blue collar.
Yes.
You got to wake up at 4 a.m. Okay? 4 a.m. That's when I wake up. I told you that.
Yeah, okay. I thought you were – are you being serious?
No, I'm not.
Yeah,
although
I
wake up at 5 a.m. to – hey, 5 a.m. That's – yeah.
My buddy told me to pick up a 5 a.m. shift, I'd be like, yeah.
5 a.m. 5 to 1.
I'd be like, no problem, boss man. And I just open my laptop at 5 a.m., go back to sleep till fucking 8. That's what I would do. You're not fucking working me like a dog.